Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 220, Thanksgiving 2022. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And as I record this, we're just a couple of weeks away from the big home cooking holiday, at least here in the United States, and I guess holiday season in general, but Thanksgiving is only 2 weeks away. So this episode is going to be all about Thanksgiving. And I've got some special guests stopping by the show today to talk about some different Thanksgiving-related topics. We've got Genevieve Coe, deputy editor of the New York Times Cooking, here to talk about pies. We've got the fabulous people over at Butterball and Samantha Wolf, specifically an expert on the Butterball Turkey Talk line. We're going to talk about turkey tips and tricks. And then we're going to wrap it up with Janine Donofrio from Love and Lemons to give us some pointers on putting more vegetables into your Thanksgiving dinner. Heck, maybe even skipping turkey altogether if that's what you'd like to do. Stick around for all that good stuff in a moment, but quick bits of housekeeping here. First and foremost, the show notes for this episode, of course, are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/220. So just drop into your favorite web browser, kitchencounterpodcast.com/220. You'll get to the show notes. And what's in the show notes, you ask? Well, it'll be mostly links to all the good stuff we're going to be talking about throughout this episode. I'm also going to have one of Genevieve Coe's great pie recipes printed there in the show notes as well. Again, along with links how to find everything else we're talking about on today's episode. So definitely bookmark that. You'll want to go back to and check that out. Also in the show notes are links to all the social media for the Kitchen Counter Podcast, Twitter, Facebook, our private Facebook group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break. That good stuff is all in the show notes as well. And also links over to the Nitty Grits Network, which is a network of podcasts out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. This show has been part of that network for a couple of years now. It's been great. Love the folks down there. Lots of other really cool shows happening on the network. You can also get there from southernfood.org. Just head over there and then check out the links for Nitty Grits podcasts. There's lots of good stuff to talk to in this episode, so let's jump right into it. First up, we've got Genevieve Coe, deputy editor of the New York Times. She just completed a new pie feature that just came out actually on New York Times Cooking this week, and it's also showing up in the print edition of the Times on November 13th. But we talk about pie. Genevieve's been baking pies for a long time. Not only did she just do a feature with 9 new pie recipes, she has a ton of other recipes over on New York Times Cooking, pie and otherwise. Now, some of that stuff is just publicly available on the website, but a lot of it is for subscription, for subscribers. And I subscribe. I like it. I think it's a pretty good service. It's $5 a month. You don't have to subscribe to the whole paper if you don't want to. And actually, I just looked to, as of today, they have a deal for the first year. It's $2.50 a month to subscribe, and then you get access to their entire archive of recipes online. Okay, Genevieve Coe, talking about pies, I'm actually going to have a reprint of the maple pie that we talk about in this segment, so you can get that at the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/220. But again, the rest of the recipes, you'll either want to pick up the special print edition on November 13th or head over to the New York Times Cooking section. Okay, without further ado, here's Genevieve Coe. Genevieve, thanks for coming on and talking about pies today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Roger.
I am a home cook, like most of my listeners are, but I have to admit, pies are kind of like kryptonite to me when it comes to baking. I know that's a pretty strong statement.
That is a pretty strong statement. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I oversold that a little bit, but I know you're working on a Thanksgiving themed pie feature.
Yes.
Tell me about pies. Are pies a special thing to you, or give me some of your background and how you came to this?
Yeah, absolutely. I can easily say that pies are my favorite thing to bake. I am a baker and I love baking all sorts of things, obviously cookies and brownies and cakes and all that, but pies, more than anything, I really, really enjoy making. And I think the one thing I enjoy is the one thing a lot of people find intimidating, which is making and rolling the crust. I just, the tactile process of that, I think once you get into the hang of it, or once you sort of get into the swing of things, for me, it's as much about a delicious buttery flaky crust at the end as it is the process of rolling and fitting it into the pie plate and shaping the edges. You know, it's sort of reminiscent of not quite playing with Play-Doh, something like that, but there's something very calming about it. I find like it's just a lovely quiet moment for me in the busyness of the world, and also just something that feels so great about working with dough. All that being said, I know both from friends, my own sister who say like, oh, you know, pie dough is the one thing that keeps me from making pies, that I find so intimidating, that I find so unpleasant. And I will say, well, every year when I do Thanksgiving pies as a recipe developer, I do always try to include at least a few things that require no roll doughs. But the other thing that I've always said and will still say is, well, that's okay. Just go and buy a frozen pie crust and pour the filling in. The filling is easy. The filling is easy peasy. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, absolutely do that. You know, the one thing you can't do that with are double crust pies, right? Like a double pie with a lattice. Obviously that's not then an option, but but for any pie where you're just dumping filling in, like, that's okay. It's totally fine. And it still means a homemade pie. That doesn't make it, you know, doesn't make it less homemade.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. There's something very therapeutic or cathartic about working with pie and, you know, getting it all to come together and you have this beautiful product at the end. For me, when I make pies, they usually taste fine, but they look like, like I took a pair of hedge clippers and trimmed the pie. They look terrible. I don't understand it. It's completely beyond me. I can make a batch of cookies that look all right. No problem. But yeah, pie crust, especially double crust. I've never figured out how people make nice edges and everything. So that's really tough for me.
I'm a big believer in like taste matters more.
Right.
Taste matters more.
Oh yeah. And that's usually the case. It's like, this pie tastes great, but it looks, you know, a little rough. But you know, you kind of eat with your eyes first, right?
Well, there are ways around it, you know, and even honestly, so for this pie feature, I always prioritize taste over looks, and obviously when the two converge, that's great. But I had started with a cream cheese pie dough for these pies because they actually, that sort of dough, you know, it's a cream cheese and butter dough, it works better in terms of looks, right? You get a more beautiful crimp that holds. It's very smooth. So when it bakes, it bakes into this very smooth look. But I had a recipe tester test it and said, oh, it's delicious. It works great. She's like, you know, but it's a little tricky to work with, which is true because the cream cheese makes it a little sticky. And I just thought, gosh, well, these pie recipes aren't for me to, I mean, they are for me to make, but they're for everyone to make. So I was like, oh, you know what? Let's just switch it back to an all butter crust, which is something I really love, an all butter crust. And that's both easier to work with, but also honestly, I think a little more delicious because it's much flakier, right? You get a lot more of the sort of flake layers, whereas a cream cheese crust is almost a little more cookie-like. And the trade-off there is that actually the all butter crust, the edges don't hold as well, right? So it's not quite as precise and pretty, but it's super delicious. It's super delicious and it's easier to make. So sometimes those are the choices that, you know, I think about when I'm developing pie recipes for people, or for obviously for NYT cooking and for the home bakers out there.
You're saying if you put cream cheese in as a component of the crust, it'll actually be a little more firm and a little more, it'll hold its shape better. Is that what you, more cookie-like?
It holds its shape better after baking or during baking.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I've never heard of that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Let's, I mean, it depends on the proportions, of course, and the crust and
sure,
whatnot. But if you've seen pies with really super perfect edges and they're just a very even color, and you know, that is likely a cream cheese dough. If you see the sort of crust that are a little mottled, a little wonky, that's more likely to be an all butter dough.
Can we talk about some of your recipes? One in particular, you have a maple pie with blueberries and cream. So what's a maple pie?
Sure. So this is a maple cream pie. So this was inspired just by my love of maple syrup. I think it's just pure maple syrup has just the most amazing sweetness because it almost tastes woodsy, right? It makes you really feel like, you feel like you're with a maple tree. And
right. There's
just such a deep sort of taste to the sweetness, right? It's not just a pure sweetness. There are nuances to it. And I thought, gosh, how can I get that into a pie? Because it feels so autumnal. It feels so perfect for Thanksgiving. And I settled on a maple cream pie. So making a custard, making a sort of classic custard. So if you imagine like a banana cream pie, coconut cream pie, that sort of custard, or vanilla, even just a vanilla cream pie, like a vanilla custard. But using maple as the primary sweetener in there. And so once I did that and I topped it with whipped cream, you know, as you would a cream pie, it hit me that it reminded me so much of enjoying a stack of pancakes with maple syrup all over, right? Just that pure maple leaf flavor. And I thought, well, what do I love with a stack of pancakes with maple syrup and whipped cream is blueberry syrup. And so, I grabbed some blueberries from the fridge and made a little syrup with them. Just really simple. It's just blueberries and sugar, really. And ended up swirling that into the whipped cream. And once I took a bite of that, right? So you have like your barely burst blueberries swirled with this whipped cream. And then you ran your fork through that into this maple custard, you know, which just has this wonderful pudding-like texture. And then you hit your buttery crust. And when I took a bite of that, I thought, oh, this is it. This is it. It's like blueberry pancakes in pie form. It was just such a fun recipe to develop, to just like sort of step by step get there. And it just reminded me so much of the joy of like sitting in a diner, you know, on a fall day when it's not quite freezing out yet, but it's sort of chilly. And the nice thing about this one and a number of the pies I developed, because I was thinking about this for Thanksgiving, you know, it can be sort of stressful to get everything on the table. But this pie, you know, it actually has to chill, right? Because it's a custard that has to set up and chill in the fridge, but it can just sort of hang out in the fridge for a couple of days before you're ready to serve. Yeah. The only thing you want to add at the end is the blueberries on top that, you know, that sort of all you're doing is like spooning them on top.
Maple cream pie. I'm going to make this Thanksgiving. That sounds really good. I love cream pies. And that sounds like, because I love maple bars, you know, just the.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
just sounds, maple's one of my favorite flavors.
Oh,
no
I just
doubt.
Love it. I love it. Yeah. Yeah.
Can we circle back to the crust question real quick? Because
sure.
I think you even mentioned that you've tried to develop some recipes that don't necessarily use a pastry crust. So I have a question that's probably heretical to pie makers everywhere. And I'm sure real pie makers listening to this will groan when I ask this. But they'll be like, good grief. If I am having total trouble with pastry crust, is it insane to think that I can use different types of crusts for pies that would traditionally use a pastry crust? Now, I mean, like an apple pie is a perfect example, right? Always you would use a pastry crust for an apple pie, or at least that's the only type I've ever had. Can I make other type of crust? And what I mean by that is like, I don't know, a cookie crust or a graham cracker crust, or will it just like get mushy and fall apart? Does it have to be a pastry crust for that?
Yeah. You can 100% make and use different crusts. And the thing to watch out for is exactly what you said. There are cases in which it might not work because the proportions of what you're doing or whatever the filling is might actually then make a cookie-based crust or a crumb-based crust really soggy.
Right.
So there are, you know, I think that's why sometimes people think, oh, baking is so hard. And I do think sometimes you do end up with these tricky moments where like, okay, that actually might not work. Like just technically, right? You might, this type of filling might have too much liquid that a crumb-based crust couldn't hold essentially in the oven. And that was why I was saying earlier, like if you have a recipe that has a pastry-based crust and you really want to make it, I would just recommend actually, buying a frozen pastry crust and doing that and just following the directions in the package. But, you know, I think I'm not the only recipe developer out there who does this, but I do think about that. I think about the rolling intimidation and I think about like, gosh, what are other pies that I can do that use a non-rolled crust. And so among these pies that I did this year, you know, I did a few where you have a, like a graham cracker based crust, which is pretty standard, but I think one that I found really fun to create and really tasty to eat is I did a pecan sandy pie. So it's a pecan pie, you know, you have your Thanksgiving pecan pie, but instead of a traditional pastry crust, which you do sort of need for that classic pecan filling, right? Because it bakes it. I think a graham cracker crust, I haven't tried it, but I would imagine that it would be too
Porous or something.
Just cold. Yeah. Porous for that sort of filling. So instead I did a cookie dough, right? Like a pecan sandy cookie dough. And you just make that dough, and that dough is really lovely and tender with the pecans in there. And you just press it. You just press the raw dough into the pan. And then that actually is so much easier for somebody who's not accustomed to or doesn't really want to roll out a crust. And you end up with this, the classic pecan pie filling, but in this cookie based dough that is easier to get into the crust. And so the answer is like, is every filling interchangeable with every crust? No, but can you create pies with different crusts and different fillings for those who don't want to roll out pie dough, classic pastry pie dough? Absolutely. 100%. And that's a lot of what I tried to do with this package of pies.
If I have never baked a pie before, pretend I haven't, and I'm telling you, like, I'm going to bake a pie for Thanksgiving, what would you tell me? Like, what to expect? Or, I will probably fail the first time. I mean, I don't know if anyone makes a pie right the first time, but
I'm sure this is biased, Roger, but I would say make one of these NYT cooking or any of our NYT cooking recipes and don't. I do mean this seriously. And yes, I'm biased, but it's also because it's true. Don't just like print out a recipe from the web, like just a random recipe, because it could for sure fail. So just to give you a sense of our process here. So I did a lot of experimentation. Which filling works with which crust? I told you that story about like, oh, okay, if our recipe tester said, hey, this pie crust is delicious, work great. It was a little bit like tricky to work with. And I was just like, forget it then, because I want to make sure every home cook who makes this recipe ends with success. And that's what we do for every single one of our recipes, not just our pie recipes, but especially with any precise baking recipes. We test and test and test and then edit and edit and edit, actually, which is what I'm still doing now, the language to make sure that anyone, right, that anyone who wants to try to make this pie, if they follow it step by step, they'll have 100% success. Like, that is the goal with every single recipe. And to be totally frank, it takes a ton of work to get there from our end. And so a lot of times what we view ourselves as doing is like, we're doing that legwork for you. We want everyone to have a really happy Thanksgiving and to be able to have a pie that they present and are really happy with and can feel proud of. And just that will bring everyone a lot of happiness and joy at the table. And so I was going to do this today because somebody had asked me like to count how many pies I made in the process of creating these pies. And I think it may be over 100.
Oh my gosh. And you're going to end up with like 9 recipes, right? Is that
yes,
right?
So there are 9 recipes. Yeah. But
about 10 per. Yeah.
Yeah. Every single iteration, because even though, for example, I think you had mentioned that you like lemon meringue pie, right?
I did a cranberry
lemon meringue pie. And I've been baking pies for a very long time, both personally and professionally. And the first time I did it, like, nailed it. It was great. So delicious. But I do know that the techniques I was using were based partly in, you know, I worked in professional pastry kitchens. They're tricky, right? So I was like, okay, so let's go back to the drawing board and do it again so that anyone who makes this pie can make it. And you don't need special tools. You don't need special equipment. So you don't need the experience to know when a step is done. And so that's really, honestly, not just for the pies, but for every single recipe, especially for something like Thanksgiving. You have to get your recipes from a place that
reputable sources
for you. Yeah. Because, or a recipe that you've made that you know for sure works, because it's not the day to be like, let me just try this random thing I saw on Instagram with like loose instructions, right?
By scrolling through your iPad as you're like trying
Right, like that's stressful, right? So in this case, right, you know, I went through countless iterations I'm actually going to count them, so I guess they're not countless, but I went through so many iterations to get them where they needed to be, then sent them to recipe testers who'd never seen them before or tried, you know, who are making them from scratch, then worked with all of our editors here to make sure even just the language makes sense, right? Somebody might say like, well, what does that mean? What does that word mean? I don't know. And then of course we have the people make them to shoot them for the, you know, for the photo shoot as well. So sometimes the person who's making that will say like, hey, at this step, I thought it'd be helpful to also say this. And so we'll add that. So at every single step, we get it so that anyone who's trying it at home can feel confident that it's going to come out and that it will come out. Yeah.
Well, we're close to our time limit here, but I wanted to ask you, Genevieve, obviously this is going to be coming out in the New York Times cooking section. How can people find that? And how can people find you if they want to learn more about you? I know on New York Times cooking, you have a ton of recipes, not pie related already on there. I was already looked at that because I'm not shilling and I don't get a kickback, but I do subscribe to New York Times cooking. I love it. The recipes are really good. If you're a home cook, I think it's a pretty value packed and subscription. So anyway, sorry to jump in front of you there, but
No, not at all. So all of these pies, I'm so old fashioned. Gosh, they're going to be in a special print section on the 13th of November, which I'm so excited about. I do love still the tactile nature of print. And so you can see the special section of pies there, but of course, all of these are going to live on New York Times and on NYT Cooking. And you know what? I have these 9 brand new ones that I'm really excited about. And I really hope people try them and feel good about them. I also have a baking book called Better Baking. So for people who really love baking or who are into baking, I've got, I think it's 120 baking recipes.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's
not just pies. That's everything. That's
sure. I'll put that in the show notes. That's great.
But yeah, and it's not just me. We have so many people contributing to our Thanksgiving recipes this year and obviously from years past. So.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and spending a little bit of your morning with us here, telling us about pies.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy early Thanksgiving.
All right. Once again, kitchencounterpodcast.com/220 to get the maple pie recipe and then links to Genevieve's cookbook. And of course, a link over to New York Times cooking if that's something you're interested in checking out. So Genevieve, thank you so much for coming on and talking pies. Well, what would Thanksgiving be without a turkey on the table? For many of us, it's the most traditional food item you have at a Thanksgiving dinner or even a dinner around this holiday season at all. So I thought it would be kind of fun to talk to the folks over at Butterball. You're probably aware that every year they have a turkey talk line that people can actually call, people like you and I. We can call this hotline. We can talk to a real live human being who knows tons about cooking turkey and actually knows a ton about holiday stuff in general. It's kind of a wild thing if you've never called it to realize that this even exists. But I talked with Samantha Wolf, a turkey talk line expert with Butterball, to learn a little bit more about the talk line. And we talk food too. We talk about turkey tips and tricks, what to look out for, common mistakes, and other interesting stuff. Now, Samantha is on her 4th year as a turkey talk line expert. She's also a registered dietitian, has been for 10 years, and she's worked in a lot of different roles in food and nutrition, including weight loss, inpatient and outpatient work at hospitals. She teaches nutrition classes for a local weight loss program through Amida Health. So she has been around the food, nutrition, and cooking world for quite a while. She's really fun to talk to. I think you're going to enjoy this. Samantha, good morning. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is cool to me because I've never actually talked to a Butterball turkey talk line expert before. And I have to say one thing before we get into the conversation. The Butterball turkey talk line for Thanksgiving is like the Santa Claus tracker is at Christmas time. You know, it's that time of year when these things come along. It's like a tradition.
Yeah, it's actually our 41st year too. So I've been with Butterball turkey talk line for 4 years, but we actually have been talking turkey for 41 years. We've evolved with the times, obviously, but It's great. We're a team of over 50 women and men. We're not only turkey talk line experts, but we're dietitians like myself. We're chefs, we're food scientists, we're culinary educators. So we really pride ourselves in that we are the turkey talk line experts.
And I guess I should correct myself too, because I was looking at some material earlier and it's not just Thanksgiving. The talk line's open through Christmas Eve. Is that right?
Yes. So through Christmas Eve, we will be here. So there's a lot of avenues to get a hold of us. I think the easiest to remember though is that 1-800-BUTTERBALL, but there's a lot of avenues, right? So they can text us at 844-877-3456. We're available live chat through butterball.com. You can email us. Alexa even has us on there. So if you have Alexa, you can ask her turkey questions and you'll get one of us helping. And then social channels. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. So we're available all across the board.
And I'll put all that in the show notes too. So if people don't have to remember that, they can pop over. I bet you 41 years ago, the Butterball people never dreamed you could talk into a little box in your house and get help from them. That's the weirdest thing to think about, really.
Yeah. And you should see the binder they had of information that they used to have to flip through. Now we're electronic if we need information, but it's very interesting to see like this huge binder that each turkey talk line expert had. You know, back 41
years ago. Right, they're like frantically flipping to find, I think we were talking before recording, like cooking, precise cooking times for a certain weight of turkey, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot to memorize. We do memorize a lot of it and we cook and we have a test kitchen, which I think a lot of people forget or don't know that, we pride ourselves that we're the turkey talk line experts, but we also go through training every year. We cook turkeys every year. We trial recipes, techniques to use the turkey or cook the turkey. So it's more than you may think. And it's a lot of fun. And I really feel like we're like a family. It's nice to be back in the office too. We do both home and office, but it's a lot of fun. And I think it's funny because people are like, oh, you work on Thanksgiving, but it's really like family. I have my Thanksgiving a little later than, you know, you may, but it's still a lot of fun. And we love helping hosts new and old get that turkey on their table.
Okay, so we're going to talk about turkey specifically in a second, but I'm wondering if I called you and I said, I got the turkey in the bag, it's no problem, but my mashed potatoes are a disaster. I mean, can you help me with that? Are you like, sorry, you're going to have to call the Idahoan mashed potato hotline
mashed potato experts.
Or how does that work?
We do. I think what's great about our team is that if I can't help you specifically, I can get you someone who can. But I think we all love hosting and we all love food. We can give you some sort of guidance. And butterball.com has so many recipes. It's not just turkey. So if they really need the mashed potatoes, we can help them search that. Or, you know, because I do cook and I learned from my mom and my grandma, I could totally help with mashed potatoes too. But it's not just turkey. And then new to this year, I think just because the past year and how, you know, stressful everything's been. Butterball is starting this 2022 comfort calendar. People can follow us along on Instagram, but we're giving 24 days of expert advice and emotional support. So we always joke like, yeah, we're here to help you with your turkey and cook it, but we're also here to help you emotionally, not only save marriages, help with friendships, but also...
That's a tall order, I bet. You guys take a lot on.
You wouldn't believe how many calls we get about the battle, like between family members or husband-wife duo or friends. We've all been through a pandemic, you know, things happen and there may be that host that's alone for the year or they don't have a family member with them anymore. So they're cooking turkey for the first time. So like, it's not only just a, I'll help you cook your turkey, but I pride myself on I'm a good listener and I try to help those hosts no matter what. And as a mom, you get a lot of, I would say last year, a lot of first time cooks were moms and you could hear the kids in the background going, you know, crazy and just being like, you got this, mom, I'll help you through it.
I think it's cool. And I'll move off of this in a minute, but I think it's cool that you're real people. It almost seems like a rarity in these days, but to get to a real person and be able to get help on so many levels is actually pretty, pretty cool.
It's a cool connection too. I like helping people, but it's like, you know, more upbeat and, you know, everyone loves Thanksgiving. We know 90% of people want to host Thanksgiving or have Thanksgiving this year. So we know there's excitement around there. There's panic. there's stress, but there's also excitement.
I'm going to try to guess and tell me if I'm how close I am. I'm going to try to guess the number one reason people call you about turkeys.
Okay, guess.
It's got to be I didn't thaw my turkey out. What do I do?
1,000%.
Is it? And do all those come? Those are probably heavier around Thanksgiving. Probably not so much right now, but
I feel like they come in waves. So right now it's where to buy my turkey, how to find the turkey, how much. We're getting into thawing. National Thaw Your Turkey Day actually is next Thursday, which is the 17th. So I think that's like the easiest thing to remember. The Thursday before Thanksgiving, I should put my turkey in the refrigerator, not anywhere else, not on the counter, in the refrigerator. The biggest questions involve thawing and, you know, how to thaw, but also like, oops, I did this. I left it overnight. What should I do? Is it still good type question? So we're coming into that. Like, I would say the next week will be totally the thawing questions.
And you can cook a turkey if it's frozen. It just takes a lot longer, right?
Yeah. The problem is, and we definitely guide them on that, is we just need to make sure we hit certain temperatures. What I strive to tell that consumer to do is try cold water thaws before a little bit to speed up that process of thawing. And then if we have a partially frozen turkey, I'm better with that. Frozen turkey, getting it past a certain temperature in the right amount of time so it's safe is a little harder. So we definitely can walk people through that cold water method. Like if they're like a few days before Thanksgiving or even the night before, it's doable for sure.
Okay. So we talked about frozen turkeys. But if there's if you could just tell somebody, look, I know you're going to make this mistake. Don't do this. If it's not thawing your turkey, what else?
That's a great question. I would say, do I wash my turkey?
Oh,
and I have this conversation with my sister all the time, like washing proteins in the sink. As a registered dietitian and someone who is very passionate about just food safety, that's not necessarily the safest thing to do, right? We could take a blue light and track all the bacteria that splashes if we wanted to, but you do not have to wash your turkey. And it saves time. It saves cleaning your sink with bleach. We just tell people to take the turkey out and pat it with some paper towels, discard those paper towels. It's super simple and you don't have to worry about washing the sink. Or sometimes people actually thaw cold water in their bathtub, then you don't have to worry about that. So I think that's the number two thing I would say.
I was going to ask you if you eat turkey or if you're sick of it, but you already said you do, I think. So
I do. And it's funny because my kids are pickier eaters, I would say, but they both love turkey. So I do make turkey a lot. And it's funny, my daughter will say, she's seven, she'll say, this is the best turkey. Thanks. It's because it's a butterball. I would say too, my family has cooked turkeys for Thanksgiving and Christmas for as long as I can remember. Like that's always our holiday protein. So, you know, this was a no-brainer job for me. Now telling your family they're cooking turkey incorrectly after so many years is kind of rough, but I think we've made some progress in the 4 years I've been with Butterball. But
well, you've got some cred to go with it. I mean, you're a turkey talk line expert. I mean, if they're going to listen to anybody, good grief, it should be you.
Yeah. Yeah. But telling your mom and grandma not to baste the turkey or you don't need to, that was a rough one, but we're okay now and they don't. So,
okay. So if you're going to make a showpiece turkey, you're cooking the big family Thanksgiving, you personally, Samantha, what's your favorite way to cook a turkey?
Oven roasting at 325 degrees. I don't do anything fancy. I don't do any marinades. I just do salt, pepper, and oil to get the golden brown. And I roast at 325. And I swear just because of the roasting, it gives it so much more flavor because you're not covering it. But that's tradition how I've done it. And I make my grandma's traditional Thanksgiving. They actually do marinades and I just don't. And it, to me, it tastes the same. And I've gotten great feedback, even from my dad, who's like the cooking police. So I stick with that and it's easy. It's not like you have to forget it's there, but there's not a whole process of it, right? Being a mom, you want to make it easier on yourself, right? So I just think that's a Butterball's preferred method. And that's, I've done them all because working for Butterball, we have to do them all, but that's still my favorite. I think it gives it the most flavor.
This is probably a question you get all the time, but I'm just imagining what kind of crazy phone calls you must get. And we'll keep it. Let's keep it in the cooking realm.
Okay. I have a good one for that. And I haven't spoke about this ever yet because I felt very bad for her. So she was a elderly lady and she was by herself and she said she cooked her turkey and she left her thermometer in. And so I'm going through all the thermometers and she goes, no, it's blue. The turkey's blue. She had a classic mercury thermometer.
And so it like broke in the oven.
It
and
broke.
Turned. Oh.
And I was like, I don't know if I would eat that. You know, I don't think that's safe. And through our whole conversation, she's like, that's okay. I just won't eat that part. So that was very interesting. And I was caught off guard, but she's like, I shouldn't make gravy, right? No, don't make gravy. So that was the most, I would say not funny, but the most interesting call I've ever got.
We should just mention, if you're going to use a thermometer, which you should, I think, if you want a good turkey product, you should know the temperature.
Yeah.
Get a good quality. I like the kind that stick in and have a little display that probes out, you know, with a wire. Those are great. They're, they're like foolproof almost.
Yeah. The dial ones are a little more confusing, I think, especially for my mother. She gets super confused
digital
about
all the
that.
Way for me.
Yeah. Digital works great. But yeah, that's like we say that's your best friend on Thanksgiving Day. You need to make sure that you hit your temperature. So 170 for the breast, 180 for the thigh, quality wise, not food safety wise. And then 165 for the center of the stuffing.
What am I forgetting to tell people about the turkey talk line? Anything?
Every year is new. And, you know, over 100,000 people contact us around Thanksgiving. So we get a lot of calls, but it's different avenues, right? Like, so the 1-800-BUTTERBALL, I always tell people, if like you don't get a text on Thanksgiving Day back, that means we're super busy and we just not be, you know, we're going through them, but we try to go as fast as we can. But if you can't get a hold of us through texting, try the phone lines. That's probably the majority of us will be on the phone lines, but also leading up to Thanksgiving, I think just planning. So I appreciate the calls now or the texts now that I can help them like plan ahead. And people write down things or people will actually, you know, say, okay, yeah, thanks. I got that recipe now. So like that planning ahead, I'm a planner. I think that's my number one tip.
I love that. All right. So 1-800-BUTTERBALL. Again, I'll put all the everything else in the show notes so people can find it. But Samantha, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I knew about the Butterball Turkey Line, but I didn't know everything that went into it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So fun.
Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for having me.
All right. November 17th, you heard Samantha. November 17th is National Thaw Your Turkey Day. Put it on your calendar. You don't want to be one of the most common mistakes at Thanksgiving. 1-800-BUTTERBALL. Again, if you want to call the hotline and talk to somebody like Samantha to help you plan or fix some of your holiday meal mishaps. She mentioned a lot of other resources like text and Alexa and all that good stuff. Email. I'll put all of that in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/220. So in case you are frantically trying to write anything down, I've got your back. It's over there. You can get all that info. So Samantha, thank you so much. Good luck on the talk line this year. Hope you have a fantastic holiday. So we just talked about turkey, and as I said in the intro to that segment, turkey is a very traditional dish for most of us here in the United States. But perhaps you don't eat turkey, or you're a vegetarian, or perhaps you don't feel like spending money on a turkey this year, or you just want to increase the amount of interesting side dishes or vegetables that are on your holiday meal table. Well, how can you do that? I spent a few minutes talking with Janine Donofrio from Love and Lemons, which is a great plant-based cooking blog over at loveandlemons.com. And she shared some ideas for not only planning on how you might reduce the meat and increase the vegetable side dishes at your Thanksgiving meal, but also shared some information on some really great recipes she has over at her blog. So let's check in with Janine over at Love and Lemons, and we'll talk about how to make veggie dishes more of a star on your holiday table. Hey, Janine, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we're talking about Thanksgiving, of course, because it's just right around the corner. And where I'm from, where I grew up, turkeys were always sort of a focal point of Thanksgiving. That was the one thing you always had on the table. But I understand not everybody wants a turkey for Thanksgiving, or maybe not everyone can get a hold of a Thanksgiving turkey. And so I thought maybe we could chat for a few minutes and you could give me some tips on maybe if a turkey isn't in your Thanksgiving future, what you can do.
I think there are two ways to go. I think you choose a beautiful plant-based or vegetarian or non-turkey main dish, like a stuffed acorn squash. I have a recipe that has mushrooms. It's hearty. There are pretty pomegranates on top. I think you make it beautiful. And then I think you can kind of build out your Thanksgiving menu from there, whether it's like a mashed potato, a green vegetable, a beautiful salad. So then you just build the menu based on vegetable that's not turkey. And I think that would be a beautiful fall menu. And then I think the second way to go is you could do an all sides Thanksgiving. I think everybody loves sides better than the turkey anyway, at least.
I think you're right. The sides are usually the star, right?
Yeah. So I think an all sides Thanksgiving would be really fun. And certainly as the sort of vegetarian person in the family, I've been to many Thanksgivings where I've only eaten the sides and I'm super full every time. So I think everybody loves, you know, mashed potatoes and stuffing. And I don't know, my main dish could just be the stuffing and then the Brussels sprouts and that kind of thing on the side.
I have a question and it's related to this idea. And we can circle back to the specific food part of it first. But I think we were chatting a little bit ago and you mentioned you have meat eaters in your family.
Yeah.
And maybe you even have people that come to your Thanksgiving dinner that would maybe expect a turkey. So as you're planning, what's my really hearty vegetable main or what's mm-hmm. my feast of sides going to be? Do you just tell people like, by the way, and they know you, right? But like, if I were going to pull it off, what do I say? I'm like, by the way, no turkey this year. We're just eating sides. I'd probably right. get some like, huh?
Yeah.
So how do you approach that when you're talking to people about like a turkeyless Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think that it depends on who your crowd is. So I think that if, say, it's like a Friendsgiving and half the people that are coming are vegetarian or somewhere on the plant, are plant eaters anyway, then I think it'd be easy to pull off and go for it. I think that if your group is more traditional, I don't necessarily think that it's the time to like take away everybody's favorite mm-hmm. holiday food necessarily. For example, like my husband, Jack, eats meat, but turkey isn't his favorite. And I could take away his turkey, but like, don't touch his mashed potatoes.
Right. That's the way I would say it. Yeah.
I think another route would be if it's the same family every year, maybe it's a slow change. Maybe there's just more vegetables this year. Maybe there's squash and a beautiful salad or a different type of green or something. And maybe the vegetables have a little bit more attention paid to them. Maybe it's not the canned green bean casserole, but it's like I have a recipe that's like fresh green beans. And so, especially at this time of year, I like to cook seasonally. The farmer's market here is kind of at the end, but there's so many great items at the farmer's market. So I would maybe just cook a few more vegetables and then approach it from there. And then maybe next year you could like have like a little bit less meat and a little bit more vegetable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's the way a lot of people are eating in general in their everyday lives right now, where it's maybe not Thanksgiving, but people are trying to figure out like, okay, well I eat meat and instead of eating it 7 days a week, I want to eat it 5 days a week, or I want to eat it 3 days a week, or whatever they want to do. So maybe Thanksgiving is approached kind of like that, where it's like, where can you fit in a vegetable instead of taking away the turkey?
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. So let's talk about veggies specifically, because you mentioned green beans, and that's a pretty traditional vegetable, at least where I'm from, for a Thanksgiving side. What are some of your favorite vegetables? Do you have a favorite green vegetable and then maybe like another vegetable side? I'm just curious because I always kind of run into the struggle of you got to have a green bean casserole. You got to do sweet potatoes. You got to do mashed potatoes. And by the time all the real traditional stuff, it's like, well, I don't really have room for anything else now. What do you try to work in? I think Brussels sprouts are not untraditional, but mm-hmm. I'm starting to incorporate those more and more into my holiday meals.
I have this great maple balsamic Brussels sprout recipe. It just makes them tangy and a little bit sweet. And that's kind of a crowd favorite around here. I also have a different Brussels sprout recipe where it's lemon zest to just make them bright, because I think a lot of Thanksgiving food can be heavy and not maybe have pops of flavor. So I kind of like to put a pop of flavor on my green vegetable. So lemon zest and Brussels sprouts is great for that. And then I have this carrot recipe that I just did that I'm totally serving at my Thanksgiving. It's roasted carrots, and with the carrot tops, instead of throwing them away, like say you've got a beautiful bunch of carrots from the farmer's market and the greens are lush and you don't want to toss them, I made a carrot gremolata with orange zest that's like with parsley and it's herby. That gets tossed with the warm roasted carrots. And then there's a tahini sauce that gets drizzled and a sprinkle of pomegranate arils. And it's really, really pretty. It's so delicious. It's so simple. And I would serve something like that to my family and they would go, oh, I haven't had tahini before. Or, oh, wow, we really like pomegranates.
Yeah.
And it's not mashed potatoes and it's not green bean casserole, but it's still a seasonal vegetable. And it is super delicious.
I love the idea of the pomegranates because, right, you can get those now. And I don't think I've ever served anything pomegranate at Thanksgiving. It could be an interesting counterpoint to like a cranberry, which again is another traditional. I love cranberry sauce. I could eat it all day, but yeah. You know, it's like, oh, it's cranberry sauce. You could add some tart and sweetness by using pomegranate and things like that in interesting ways. Like you're saying, to garnish maybe a roasted carrot dish. I think that's pretty smart. I like that idea. I think your Brussels sprouts recipe has pomegranate.
Yeah, it does. I am pomegranate obsessed. So I kind of think I sprinkle them on a little bit of everything. If I was planning the menu, each and everything, I might still sprinkle pomegranates.
People would be like, oh, great, more pomegranates.
I know. Well, they're so pretty too. I love to make something beautiful, like especially if you're laying out a Thanksgiving spread and you're trying to get people excited about vegetables. I think they're just so pretty and colorful as it is. But especially if you have like something that's either roasted and it gets like a caramelized or a deep color, then I think like a nice pop of pomegranate or even like fresh herbs, a sprinkle of something, I think it livens up heavier dishes.
And you made a good point, which is totally true. Most of the time at a Thanksgiving table, everything's kind of heavy and a lot of savory stuff. Or if it's not savory, it's ridiculously sweet, right? Like a sweet potato casserole where it's got the mushroom, or not the mushrooms, the marshmallow. You know what I mean? It's a stream of flavors, but it's nice to sprinkle in a little bit of brightness on otherwise, you know, I don't want to say bland because it's not bland, but you know what I mean? Just add some high notes to things. It's really a pleasant surprise at most Thanksgivings, I find. Okay, I have one more question on Thanksgiving food. And it occurred to me, we've talked a lot about mashed potatoes. I always think of gravy as turkey gravy because I roast a turkey. What do you like to make gravy from if you don't have a turkey?
Mushrooms, hands down. I have this super delicious mushroom gravy recipe. Even my husband, Jack, yesterday we were sitting talking about this and he's like, you know, I don't think I actually like turkey gravy because this mushroom gravy, it's thick and it's creamy and there's so much flavor that comes from the mushrooms. So you cook the mushrooms down and thicken it with a little bit of cornstarch and there are some fresh herbs in it. And it has like a deep sort of rich flavor. You can get so much flavor out of mushrooms. It's a shallot, tamari, garlic, thyme, rosemary. So the tamari really brings out the deep flavors of the mushrooms and then the fresh herbs. I'm really into fresh herbs. I think that's another thing that happens at Thanksgiving is there's a lot of dry herbs.
Poultry seasoning and all that kind of stuff.
Like dried sage. So that's something I do a lot is exchange fresh herbs. Like I have a stuffing recipe that was my grandma's stuffing recipe that I use sourdough bread and leeks. And instead of dried sage, it's fresh sage and fresh rosemary and fresh thyme. And I think it just adds a lot of flavor.
Janine, where can we find your blog at?
My blog is loveandlemons.com. And on Instagram, I'm loveandlemons. And Facebook, Love Lemons Food.
And I'll put all that in the show notes so people don't have to remember that. But I'll get that from you. We'll put that in the show notes along with your blog. And I'll link to all the recipes from your blog that we talked about so people can find it. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about ways to either minimize or substitute turkey at Thanksgiving dinner.
Thank you for having me.
Janine, that was great. Thank you so much. All of those great recipes we talked about, the couple of Brussels sprout recipes, the carrot recipe, your gravy recipe made out of mushrooms, I'm going to put all those over in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/220. But if you want to head over to her blog, and I highly recommend it, you will go to loveandlemons.com. Check it out there. And I'll put all of her social media and other resources in the show notes. So if you want to check out more from Janine and the Love and Lemons folks, head over there. Well, that's going to do it for the Thanksgiving 2022 episode. I really appreciate you tuning in. I hope you're planning. I hope you're prepared and you're figuring out your Thanksgiving meal now and not waiting until, let's say, the day or two before. And remember, the 17th is National Thaw Your Turkey Day, so make sure you stay on top of that. I also wanted to say thank you to Lauren Murphy and Mariah Montenegro at Edelman and Stephanie Wooden at Cafe Media for helping out with this episode. Remember, the show notes are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/220. And if you think it might be of interest to your friends or family members, please share this podcast with them. We'd love to have them join our listening community. All right, everybody. I hope you have a safe and wonderful and joyful holiday celebration with your friends or your family or whoever you find yourself spending time with this Thanksgiving. Until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.